Check, 1, 2, check, 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 check. Okay, that's good. You like that. All right. Well, good morning and welcome to the Poetry Show, broadcasting almost always on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and on Enlightened Radio, which, of course, is live all the time on www.enlightenedradio.org. I should say almost all the time. If you have trouble seeing the player on your phone when you go to that site, then you can just go to player.enlightenedradio.org, and that's all you'll see is a player. Hope you enjoy our poetry programs. Janet Harrison is our chief inspiration and host here. And she sent me some poems day before yesterday on by David Wagoner, who I just love his poems. And and I'd forgotten, because she covered him once before years ago. I remember her spending some time, at least a whole show, one time, on his poems. And for reasons that only I can explain, I haven't, revisited his poetry since that day, but it was just a great pleasure last night and this morning, taking a look at the poems that she selected for our possible inclusion today's poetry show. Janet, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about David Wagoner and the kind of touch and reputation and endurance at the craft of poetry that he represents.
Actually, I had prepared. Let me find something. Give me a chance.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, by the way, you asked me in an email earlier that if we decided to read the poem called Stones, then maybe we should play Carrie Newcomer's Geodes tune, which is obviously appropriate. Well, obvious to those who have read both the poem and heard the song before. So we could do that too. Just keep in mind that when I play it, for some reason, I think it has to do with my Zoom settings somewhere, but it goes fine on the podcast and it goes fine over the internet, but for some reason across Zoom to participants, it's staticky. So just be aware of that if we play this tune. What you're hearing is not what's going over the air. What's going over the air, it sounds fine. Anyway, but go ahead if you have any thoughts.
Blurb about Dave Wagoner. I'm sorry. I'm missing it. Let me give me a moment.
Oh, okay. More. And well, I tell you what I can do. I can start by reading this poem, Stones. Or I can start by, let me play Carrie Newcomer's tune. Let's do that. I happen to have it right queued up here.
There we go. No, you can't always tell one from another, and it's best not to judge a book by its tattered cover. I've found when I tried or looked deeper inside, what appears unadorned might be wondrously formed. You can't always tell, but sometimes you just know. Round here we throw geodes in our gardens. They're as common as the rain corn silk in July. Unpretentious browns and grays, a stain of Indiana clay. They're what's left of shallow seas, glacial rock and mystery. And inside there shines a secret bright as promise. And all these things that we call Bermuda are just miracles clothed in the commonplace. And you'll see if you try, in the next stranger's eyes, that God walks around in muddy boots, sometimes rags, and that's the truth. You can't always tell, but sometimes you just know. Some say geodes were made from pockets of tears, trapped away in small places for years upon years, pressed down and transformed till the true self was born, and the whole world moved on like the last notes of a song, a love letter sent without return address. From another, and it's best not to judge a book by its tattered cover. I don't open them to see folks round here just like me. We have come to believe there's hidden good in common things. You can't always tell, but sometimes you just know. You can't always tell, but sometimes you just know.
Well, that was Carrie Newcomer's Geodes, from an album, I think, by the same name, but maybe not. I apologize to Carrie Newcomer for that. anyway, Janet, have you got some...
Yes, I have it now.
Go ahead.
David Wagner was born in Ohio in 1926, and he was raised in Indiana, although his poetry is most closely identified with the Pacific Northwest. In 1947, his senior year at Penn State, he took two courses from poet Theodore Ruthke and decided he had to be a poet. He is a professor emeritus at the University of Washington, where he taught from 1954. He's the author of nearly 20 collections of books, with a new collection, After the Point of No Return, due out in April 2012. This was an old blurb I wrote. Two of his poems were translated, were nominated for the National Book Award, Collected Poems and In the Broken Country. He edited the literary magazine Poetry Northwest from 1966 until its final issues in 2002. Additionally, he's published 10 novels. Among his numerous awards are the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, given for a lifetime achievement in poetry, and fellowships from the Ford Foundation, the Guggenheim Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Of his work, Wagner has said, and this is a very important quote, "Teaching itself has been part of a three-way exchange for my life, editing, teaching, and writing. Any energy I put into one of these seems to come back to me in another form from one of the others, and this has been a three-way cycle." Poet X.J. Kennedy praised Wagner's work. To read him is to live in a larger world.
Indeed. Indeed.
So I had forgotten about the novels.
Do you know what kind of novels they were, or
No, I don't.
No, okay. I mean, they weren't Sam Spade type novels, but they might be.
I have no idea.
You know. Some of the.
And the four poems I sent you were published in Terrain magazine.
Okay.
Good. Do you want to read Stones?
Yeah, I can read Stones. I think I have it here, even set up for me here. Hold on, just to, yeah, I do. Okay, Stones. I don't have a date on when this was written, but anyway, doesn't matter. I bring them from the mountains, from the sea, from the edge of streams, and look at them. Heft them, hold them in hand while they keep holding themselves harder. Is it because they haven't had to change their surfaces in our time, though in theirs they've suffered the blunt demands of ice and water and wind and God knows fire, been cracked and frozen, thawed, made molten again? And again, have started over, grinding and being ground, from monument to boulder, to rock, to river stone, to gravel, to pebbles, to sand, to slurries of grit, to dust. Anyway, that's the...
That was what made me think of geodes. This poem about Stones.
Hold on. Say. Okay. It got fixed. I'll have to edit that part out there. I'm not even quite sure what fixed it, but anyway. Well, I thought that poem was a perfect example of broadening your horizon, you know, of sensing a wider world. It telescopes out and in. Is that the right word? Telescope? I don't know.
Yes.
How did you... And of course, Carrie's song about geodes does the same thing, in a way. But
I loved all the demands that he goes through, the blunt demands of ice and water and wind and God knows fire, been cracked and frozen, thawed, made molten again and again, have started over, grinding and being ground, from monument to boulder to rock to river stone to gravel to pebbles to stand, to slurries of grit, to dust. Yeah. I loved all that geological references of how a stone comes from being a mountain to a stone.
Right. Oh, yes, there's, you know, someone was telling me, pointing out that in the history of the world, there have been... Someone guesses at 100 billion humans who have lived, and then says that nonetheless, the estimated content of organic material, never mind just humans, in you know. Our nearest galaxy is have an almost uncountable number of zeros to the right of the decimal point in terms of significance. So, I just, you know, that poem kind of reminds me, you know, there's no limit to how cosmic the elevation how microscopic and infinitely small, you know, our dimensions. Let our imagination, you know, go. Right? You know. If we didn't have in our mind Cartesian coordinates, would the question of infinity bother us much? Maybe not.
Who knows?
What's next on the agenda?
I think I'll read a footnote for Isaiah, if that's okay with you.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And again, these poems were published in Terrain. Okay, come on. There you go. A footnote for Isaiah 43. The other kinds of voices that cry in the wilderness were much too numerous for Isaiah to mention them, concerned as he must have been with the coming of his Lord. The desert had heard it all before, the cracked lips croaking, "Help," or "For God's sake, water," or maybe forecasting disasters or doom again. But for those lost in the woods, which is also a wilderness, a shout is a warning, meaning, "Here I am, stay away." And even singing or talking announces personal space and a claim to territory. And whistling, squealing, and crying are dangerous, strange attractors that call all predators to come to the chaos now, to join in the consumption and quick reorganization of a living organization, namely, what used to be you.
Yeah, right, namely. Right. I like that one. Was I wrong? I thought David Wagoner had an association with the University of Virginia, but is that wrong?
No, that's wrong.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
No. All right. No, he's really associated with the Pacific Northwest and the University of Washington.
I just noticed.
But that one has a chilling ending. The idea of being in the woods and calling predators to you and what used to have been you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very it's a beautiful thread of impressions that he takes through different, you know, totally different environments in that. It's a beautiful way of how thinking can become its opposite, and inverts itself, you know, without too much difficulty at times, but by kind of associating with the narratives that have different different outcomes, you know, and different purposes. So it's I think he's just quite artful about that. He must have been in a state of excitement much of the time to have that much info flowing through at once. How my impression is that the poems are pretty carefully crafted, not just.
Yes, they are.
I mean, they're wordy in a way, in an appealing way, but they're. You know, they're wordy, meaning the thoughts are dense, but they do have a kind of a carefully crafted structure. So
yes, they do, and he's very rich in imagery.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's. You think he was one of those folks that, when he's going along, writes down things he sees just. To provide himself a little personal dictionary.
Whether he just noticed and came back to things. I'm not sure what his process was. Except he did say that teaching and editing were also fed into his poetry, which some people say it takes away from things, but he felt like it added.
Well, that's probably true. Now, if he's teaching, and plus he was a well-known, so he was probably teaching students and colleagues that were, you know, into it. too. I mean, so you're going to pick up, it's not just going to be people learning how to write, okay? But it's going to be, you could get a lot of input, right? I mean, that's an interesting concept, you know? People used to criticize, you know how I like Bob Dylan and everything like that, but that people used to criticize him for, including, in the many, many lines of many songs, stuff from other places. And it's true, he was like a sponge, right? And then just absorbed a immense amount of culture, right? And then just poured it out in his way. And I think that ability to absorb a lot, intake a lot, and I think it does add a certain richness to the poems, like that, the wider world, you feel the wider world kind of open up to you, in it. I think that maybe that's partly a consequence of, having a very active conversation going on with the public at different levels all the time about, what he's thinking and reading and writing. I remember my one of my creative writing teacher I had in graduate school who was a big fan of writing down words that you heard or saw or whatever, like keeping a dictionary of words or things. He said that was always very helpful when he was trying to write descriptive, either verse or prose. But I never mastered that, so.
Well, there's all different ways of doing things. Some people like to keep journals. Some people like to, just manage things mentally. Some people like to drop, epigraphs, jump off epigraphs for poems. Some people use pictures as inspiration. I think a lot of Wagner's inspiration came from the natural world.
So it's a lot of outdoors,
yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, there's been a lot of very rich poetry that, it's like that. A lot from last week, a lot of Robert Frost poems are out of doors or, close to the window. Let's put it that way. remember Gary Snyder?
Yes.
The West Coast poet that was, really... almost completely out of doors, but not so much Emily Dickinson.
No. So people have different things. Emily Dickinson is kind of unique in American poetry. She was very interior.
Well, do we have one of the other poems?
Do you want to read Thoreau in the Rain, or do you want me to read it?
I can, hold on a second here.
If you read that, I'll go to one that I didn't send you, but one I did on the radio before, which is my favorite David Wagner poem, which is called Bad, but I need to, I need a few minutes.
All right. So Thoreau in the Rain. Yes. He liked bad weather best. He would keep walking.
Sorry, start over.
Okay. He liked bad weather best. He would keep walking when others hurried home. Then he would be the only one on a road or a pathway or trespassing through an orchard, lifting his boots and putting them down among the windfall apples. Rain beat on his cape. He felt it urging him to deepen like a bush or a wildflower, to change his shape, to smooth away his crotchets and quirks as he walked through cloudbursts or almost balmy feathers of mist when the wind would sigh and sweep its long curtains and scars and pleated skirts and antimacassars and tassels across his home away from home. He would sit content, absorbed, on his favorite furniture all morning long on a stump like a toadstool. Yeah.
I love the opening to that poem. I just like that.
Right.
You can't just imagine Thoreau out in the rain getting wet.
Yeah, right. I know. Well, it does. Does it have any foundation is it a fact about Thoreau that he actually did like bad weather best? I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
I wouldn't know a reference to prove that.
No.
I wouldn't be able to do a footnote, in other words.
No. But okay, we'll just assume that it feels like Thoreau, doesn't it? At least by his, you know, my
sense
of Thoreau.
It sounds like Thoreau, too. And the way he uses the natural imagery from Thoreau, I thought, made it a very unified poem.
Right. It just, yeah, I mean, by the way, the word antimacassars. I think it's a ornament of some sort, of some kind, okay, on a hat or a scarf or something. But we should look that up because I've heard it before and I just, you know, I should look it up now. Just so our audience doesn't think that we, just make up words as we go along.
It'd be one for your list.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. An antimacassar is a small cloth placed over the backs or arms of chairs or the head or cushions of a sofa to prevent soiling of the permanent fabric underneath. The name also refers to a cloth flap collar on a sailor's shirt or top used to keep macassar oil off the uniform. Antimacassar.
Okay.
Well, who knew? There you go.
I can remember going to visit my grandmother and her having them on her chairs.
Antimacassars. That's right. All right.
I didn't know what they were called.
Well, I don't know how to quite categorize that poem. It was a bit unique.
Mm-hmm.
Going from a fairly elevated state to a toadstool.
Yes.
But that's at harmony with nature in a quiet way. Has a Quaker touch to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Well, then Thoreau had sort of a Quaker touch at times. Okay, I'm going to read my favorite David Wagner poem. It's not one I sent you, but it's one you'll remember because we've done it before. And it's called, but it's worth repeating. It's called Bad. And it's dedicated to Caroline Kaiser, who once told me this story. So here we go. Bad. She had been bad, very bad at dinner, and was bad. Told if she didn't stop being bad downstairs, she would have to go upstairs and be bad all by herself. And she didn't concentrate right now on the idea of being good. The devil would come and get her. But she went right on being bad and wouldn't go up. And when she was told and finally had to be scolded and carried up the stairs and put to bed bad and told to think under the covers very carefully about her behavior with her head on the strange pillow and act her age. And then her mother went downstairs to her relatives, who all agreed to go on fortifying their positions with exorcisms of mountain monks and the calming essences of a suddenly more reasonable evening. But soon they could hear a murmuring above, like the spell of an enchanted princess saying something or another over and over. The tight-lipped mother stalked upstairs, intending to call that child to order. But outside the bedroom door, she heard the high voice crooning steadily and soothingly, "Go away, devil. Go away, devil. Go away, devil." And that mother felt a flurry of remorse and entered and found her daughter sitting up in a strange bed, as rigid as a new pupil, staring toward the window open to the good fresh air. And beyond the antique cherry footboard were the great horned owl, his head swiveling slightly to comprehend, had perched to listen with his whole attention.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I love that poem.
That's right. Well, that's a great one for reading aloud, too. It is. As a
it
plot.
Really is.
It's very good. Very good. Yeah. I was waiting with bated breath about the, you know, the great horned owl. Oh, boy. Interesting.
I think Carolyn Kaiser was about 3 when that happened.
Well, oh, boy. Anyway. Well, that poem speaks for itself. That needs no anybody that doesn't get grabbed by that one. Probably miss the next train, too. Well, David Wagoner, so is he gone from us now?
Yes, he's passed.
Okay. Well, that was great. I think he's a wonderful poet. Those of you who got to go through the rest of your day here, I hope that David Wagoner's spirit will haunt you a little bit. I think it'll help you out. Widen your perspective at just at the right moment when you have to step away from another train. Anyway, thanks so much for being part of us today and the poetry show. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. Bye-bye, Janet.
Bye-bye.